He chose to be good. He went into a crouch and raised his hands in a small, abbreviated gesture of surrender. I hefted the pry bar in my left hand and straight-armed the guy onward toward the head of the stairs. He was meek all the way down to the basement. He gave me no trouble on the way through the office room. Then we got to the second room, and he saw the three guys on the floor and sensed what was in store for him. He tensed up. Adrenaline kicked in. Fight or flight. Then he looked at me again, a huge, determined man in ludicrous shoes, holding a big metal bar. He went quiet. I asked him, "Do you know the combinations for the cells?" He said, "No." "So how do you give painkiller injections?"
"To the bars."
"What happens if someone has a seizure and you can't get in the cell?"
"I have to call."
"Where's your equipment?"
"In my locker."
"Show me. Open it." We went back to the anteroom, and he led me to a locker and spun the combination down. The door swung open. I asked him, "Can you open any of the other cabinets?"
"No, just this one."
His locker had a bunch of shelves inside, piled high with all kinds of medical stuff, wrapped syringes, a stethoscope, small files of colorless liquids, packs of cotton balls, pills, bandages, gauze, tape, plus a shallow box of tiny nitrogen capsules and a box of wrapped darts, which made some kind of bureaucratic sense. I imagined the management conference back when they were writing the operations manual. The Pentagon, staff officers in charge, some junior ranks present, an agenda. Some DOD counsel insisting that the dart gun's ammunition be held by a qualified medical officer, because anesthetic was a drug, and so on and so forth. Then some other active duty type saying that compressed nitrogen wasn't medical. A third guy pointing out it made no sense at all to keep the propellant separate from the load, around and around. I imagined exasperated agents eventually giving up and giving in. "Okay, whatever, let's move on." I asked, "What exactly is in the darts?" The guy said,
"Local anesthetic to help the wound site, plus a lot of barbiturate."
"How much barbiturate?"
"Enough."
"For a gorilla?" The guy shook his head. "Reduced dose, calculated for a normal human." "Who did the calculation?"
"The manufacturer."
"Knowing what it was for?"
"Of course."
"With specifications and purchase orders and everything?"
"Yes."
"And tests?"
"Down at Guantanamo."
"Is this a great country or what?" The guy said nothing. I asked him, "Are there side effects?"
"None."
"You sure? You know why I'm asking, right?" The guy nodded. He knew why I was asking. I was fresh out of computer cords, so I had to keep half an eye on him while I found the gun and loaded it. Loading it was a jigsaw puzzle. I wasn't familiar with the technology. I had to proceed on common sense and logic alone. Clearly, the trigger mechanism tripped the gas release. Clearly, the gas propelled the dart. But guns are basically simple machines. They have fronts and backs. Cause and effect happens in a rational sequence. I got the thing charged up inside 40 seconds. I said, "You want to lie down on the floor?" The guy didn't answer. I said, "You know, safe, bumping your head." The guy got down on the floor. I asked him, "Any preference as to where? Arm, leg?"
"It works best into muscle mass."
"So roll over." He rolled over, and I shot him in the ass. I reloaded the thing twice more and put darts into the two agents that were liable to wake up, which gave me at least an 8-hour margin, unless there were other unanticipated arrivals on the horizon, or unless the agents were supposed to call in with status checks every hour, or unless there was a car already on its way to take us back to D.C., which conflicting thoughts made me feel half relaxed and half urgent. I carried the pry bar through to the cell block. Jacob Mark looked at me and said nothing. Theresa Lee looked at me and said, "They sell shoes like that on 8th Street now?" I didn't answer, just stepped around to the back of her cell and jammed the flat end of the pry bar under the bottom of the structure. Then I leaned my weight on the bar and felt the whole thing move. Just a little. Just a fraction of an inch. Not much more than the natural flex of the metal.
"That's stupid," Lee said. "This thing is a self-contained, freestanding cube. You might be able to tip it over, but I'll still be inside."
I said, "Actually, it's not freestanding. It's not bolted to the floor, but it's clamped down by the sewer connection under the toilet."
"Will that help?"
"I hope so. If I tip it up and the sewer connection holds, then the floor will tear off and you can crawl out."
"Will it hold?"
"It's a gamble. It's a kind of competition."
"Between what?"
19th century legislation and a sleazy 21st century welding shop with a government contract. See how the floor isn't welded all the way around, just in some places?"
"That's the nature of spot welding."
"How strong is it?"
"Plenty strong.
Stronger than the toilet pipe, probably." "Maybe not. There was cholera in New York in the 19th century. A big epidemic. It killed lots of people. Eventually, the city fathers figured out what was causing it, which was cesspools mixing with the drinking water. So they built proper sewers, and they specified all kinds of standards for the pipes and the connectors. Those standards are still in the building code all these years later. A pipe like this has a flange lapping over the floor. I'm betting it's fixed stronger than the spot welds. Those 19th century public works guys erred on the side of caution. More so than some modern corporation wanting Homeland Security money." Lee paused a beat. Then she smiled. Briefly.
"So either I get illegally busted out of a government jail cell, or the sewer pipe gets torn out of the floor. Either way, I'm in the shit."
"You got it."
"Great choice."
"Your call."
"Go for it."
Two rooms away, I heard a telephone start to ring. I knelt down and eased the tip of the pry bar into the position it needed to be in, which was under the bottom horizontal rail of the cell, but not so far under it that it also caught the edge of the floor tray. Then I kicked it sideways a little until it was directly below one of the upside-down T-wells, where the force would be carried upward through one of the vertical bars. Two rooms away, the telephone stopped ringing. I looked at Lee and said, "Stand on the toilet seat. Let's give it all the help we can." She climbed up and balanced. I took up all the slack in the pry bar and then leaned down hard and bounced. Once, twice, three times, 250 pounds of moving mass multiplied by 60 inches of leverage. Three things happened. First, the pry bar dug itself a shallow channel in the concrete under the cage, which was mechanically inefficient. Second, the whole assemblage of bars distorted out of shape a little, which was also inefficient. But third, a bright bead of metal pinged loose and skittered away.